felt the weight of worry lift from her mind.
"Now I know why I felt there was something strange about him," she said as she sighed her relief.
Kara didn't look so relieved. "Why did you announce yourself to the soldiers inside the Confessor's palace?"
"Emperor Jagang didn't explain his instructions, Mistress Kara."
"Jagang is from the old world and no doubt doesn't know about Mord Sith," Kara said to Callan. "He probably thought a wizard like Marlin here would be able to announce himself, cause a panic, and wreak havoc."
Callan considered the supposition.
"Could be.
Jagang has the Sisters of the Dark as his puppets, so he would have been able to get information about Richard. Richard wasn't at the palace long enough to learn much about his gift. The Sisters of the Dark would have told Jagang that Richard doesn't know how to use his magic. Richard is the Seeker and knows how to use the Sword of Truth, but he doesn't know how to use his gift. Jagang might have thought to send in a wizard on the chance that he might succeed, and if he didn't, so what? He has others."
"What do you think, my pet?"
Marlin's eyes filled with tears.
"I don't know, Mistress Kara. I don't know. He didn't tell me, I swear."
A tremor seeped from his jaw into his voice.
"But it could be. What the Mother Confessor says is true. He doesn't care if we are killed while performing a task. Our lives mean little to him."
Kara turned to Callan.
"What else?"
Callan shook her head.
"I can't think of anything else at the moment. I guess it could all make sense. We'll come back later after I've thought about it. Maybe I'll think of some other questions that might settle it."
Kara pointed her aegil at his face. "You stand right there on that spot of your spit until we come back. Whether it's in 2 hours or 2 days, it doesn't matter. If you sit down, or any part of you other than the soles of your feet touches the floor, you will be down here all alone with the pain it brings for going against my wishes. Understand?" He blinked as a drop of sweat ran into his eye.
"Yes, Mistress Kara." "Kara, do you think it necessary that—"
"Yes, I know my business. Let me do it. You yourself reminded me what's at stake and how we dared not take any chances."
Callan relented.
"All right."
Callan took hold of a rung above her head and started up the ladder. On the second rung, she paused and looked back. Frowning, she stepped back off the ladder.
"Marlin, did you come to Adendril alone?" "No, Mother Confessor."
Kara snatched the neck of his tunic.
"What? You came with others?" "Yes, Mistress Kara."
"How many?"
"With one other, Mistress Kara. She was a Sister of the Dark."
Callan's fist joined Kara's on his tunic.
"What was her name?"
Frightened by both women, he tried to back away a bit, but their grip on his tunic wouldn't allow it.
"I don't know her name," he whined, "I swear."
"She was a Sister of the Dark from the palace where you lived for close to a century, and you don't know her name?" Callan asked. Marlin licked his lips, his gaze moving between the two women.
"There were hundreds of sisters at the Palace of the Prophets. There were rules. We had teachers assigned to us. There were places we didn't go, and sisters we never came in contact with, like those who handled administration. I didn't know them all, I swear. I saw her before at the palace, but I didn't know her name, and she didn't tell me."
"Where is she now?" Marlin shook in terror.
"I don't know. I haven't seen her for days since I came to the city."
Callan gritted her teeth.
"What did she look like then?"
Marlin licked his lips again as his gaze flicked back and forth between the two women.
"I don't know. I don't know how to describe her. A young woman. I don't think she was long out of being a novice. She was young-looking, like you, Mother Confessor. Pretty. I thought she was pretty. She had long hair. Long brown hair."
Callan and Kara shared a look.
"Nadine," they said as one.
Chapter 4
"Mistress Kara!"
Marlin called from below. Kara turned, hanging by one hand on the next rung down from Callan. She held the torch out in her other hand.
"What?" "How will I sleep, Mistress Kara? If you don't come back tonight, and if I have to stand, then how will I sleep?"
"Sleep? That's not my concern. I told you, you must remain on your feet on that spot. Move, sit, or lie down, and you will be very sorry. You will be all alone with the pain, understand?"
"Yes, Mistress Kara,"
came the weak voice from the darkness below. Once Callan was up in the hall, she reached down and took the torch from Kara, freeing the Mord Sith to use both hands to climb out. Callan handed the torch to a relieved-looking Sergeant Collins.
"Collins, I'd like all of you to remain here. Keep the door locked and don't go down there for anything. Don't let anyone else so much as take a peek."
Yes, Mother Confessor.
Sergeant Collins hesitated.
Is it dangerous, then?
Collins understood his concern.
No.
Kara has control of his power. He's incapable of using his magic. She took appraisal of the troops clogging the dingy stone corridor. There had to be close to 100.
I don't know if we'll be back tonight, she told the sergeant.
Get the rest of your men down here. Divide them into squads. Take shifts so that there's at least this many down here at all times. Lock all the barricade doors, post archers at the doors and at each end of this hall.
I thought you said there was no need for concern, that he couldn't use his magic.
Kalan smiled. Do you want to have to explain it to Kara here if someone sneaks in and rescues her charge out from under your nose in her absence? He scratched his stubble as he glanced at Kara.
I understand, Mother Confessor. No one will be allowed within shouting distance of this door.
Still don't trust me?
Kara asked when they were out of earshot of the soldiers. Kalan offered a friendly smile.
My father was King Wyborn. He was Cyrilla's father, and then mine. He was a great warrior. He taught me that it's impossible to be too cautious with prisoners.
Kara shrugged as they passed the sputtering torch.
Fine by me. It doesn't hurt my feelings. But I have his magic. He's helpless. I still don't understand how you can fear magic and have such control over it. I told you, only if he specifically attacks me with it. And how do you take control of it? How do you make it yours to command?
Kara spun the Aegil on the end of the chain at her wrist as she walked.
I don't know myself. We just do it.
The Master Rawl himself takes part in some of the training of Mord Sith. It is during that phase that the ability is instilled in us. It's not magic from within us, but transferred to us, I guess.
Kalan shook her head. Yet you don't know really what you're doing, and still it works.
With her fingertips, Kara hooked the iron rail at a corner, swung around it, and followed Kalan up the stone stairs.
You don't have to know what you are doing in order for magic to work.
What do you mean?
Well, Lord Rawl told us that a child is magic, the magic of creation. You don't have to know what you are doing to make a child. One time, this girl, a very naive girl, of about 14 summers, a daughter of one of the staff at the People's Palace in Dahara, told me that Darkin Rawl, Father Rawl, he liked to be called, had given her a rosebud, and it had bloomed in her fingers as he smiled down at her. She said that was how she had come to be with child, through his magic.
Kara laughed without humor.
She really thought that was how she became pregnant? It never occurred to her that it was because she had spread her legs for him? So you see, she did magic, created a son, and without knowing how she had really done it.
Kalan paused on the landing in the shadows and seized the crook of Kara's elbow, halting her.
All Richard's family is dead. Darkin Rawl killed his stepfather, his mother died when he was young, and his half-brother Michael betrayed Richard, allowing Dennat to capture him.
After Richard defeated Darkin Rawl, Richard forgave his brother for what he had done to him, but ordered him executed because his treachery had knowingly caused the torture and death of countless people at the hands of Darkin Rawl.
I know how much family means to Richard. He would be thrilled to come to know a half-brother. Could we send word to the palace in Dahara and have him brought here? Richard would be...
Kara shook her head and glanced away. Darkin Rawl tested the child and discovered that he was born without the gift. Darkin Rawl was eager to have a gifted heir. He considered anything less deformed and worthless.
I see.
Silence filled the stairwell.
The girl? The mother?
Kara heaved a sigh, realizing that Kalan wanted to hear it all.
Darkin Rawl had a temper, a sick temper. He crushed the girl's windpipe with his bare hands after he had made her watch him, watch him kill her son.
When ungifted offspring came to his attention, it often made him angry, and then he did that. Kalan let her hand fall away from Kara's arm. Kara's eyes came up. A calm had repossessed them.
A few of the Mord Sith suffered a similar fate.
Fortunately, I never came to be with child when he chose me for his amusement. Kalan sought to fill the silence.
I'm glad Richard freed you from bondage to that beast. Freed everyone.
Kara nodded, her eyes as cold as Kalan had ever seen them.
He is more than Lord Rawl to us. Anyone who ever hurts him will answer to the Mord Sith, to me.
Kalan suddenly saw what Kara had said about Richard being allowed to keep Kalan in a new light. It was the kindest thing she could think to do for him, allowing him to have the one he loved, despite her concern for the danger to his heart.
"You'll have to wait in line," Palin said.
Kara at last grinned.
"Let us pray to the good spirits that we never have to fight over first rights."
"I have a better idea. Let's keep harm from reaching him in the first place. But remember, when we get up there, that we don't know for sure who this Nadine is. If she is a sister of the dark, she is a very dangerous woman. But we don't know for sure that she is. She might be a dignitary, a woman of rank and importance. It could even be that she's nothing more than a rich nobleman's daughter. Maybe he banished her poor farm boy lover and she's simply looking for him. I don't want you harming an innocent person. Let's just keep our heads."
"I'm not a monster, Mother Confessor."
"I know. I didn't mean to say that you were. I just don't want our desire to protect Richard to make us lose our heads. That includes me. Now, let's get up to Petitioner's Hall."
Kara frowned. "Why would we go there? Why not go to Nadine's room?"
Colin started up the second flight, two steps at a time.
"There are 288 guest rooms in the Confessor's Palace, divided among six separate wings at distant points. I was distracted before and didn't think to tell the guards where to put her, so we have to go ask."
Kara shouldered open the door at the top of the stairs and, head swiveling, entered the hall ahead of Colin, as she liked to do in order to check the way for trouble.
"Seems a poor design. Why would guest rooms be separated?"
Colin gestured to a corridor branching to the left.
"This way is shorter."
She slowed as two guards stepped aside to make way for them, and then quickened her pace along the deep blue carpet running down the hall.
"The guest rooms are separated because many diplomats visited the palace on business with the council, and if the wrong diplomats are placed too close together, they could become very undiplomatic. Keeping peace among allies was sometimes a delicate balancing game that included accommodations."
"But there are all the palaces for the representatives of the lands on King's Row."
Colin grunted cynically. "Part of the game."
When they entered Petitioner's Hall, everyone went to their knees again. Colin had to give them the formal acknowledgement before she could speak with the captain. He told her where he had put Nadine, and she was about to leave when a boy, one of the group of Jala players waiting patiently in the hall, snatched the floppy wool hat from his head of blonde hair and bolted toward them. The captain caught sight of him trotting across the room.
"He's waiting to see Lord Rawl. Probably wants him to come watch another game."
The captain smiled to himself.
"I told him it would be all right if he waited, but that I couldn't promise that Lord Rawl could see him."
He shrugged self-consciously.
"Least I could do. I was at the game yesterday with a crowd of soldiers. The boy and his team won me 3 silver marks."
Hat crushed in both little fists, the boy genuflected on the other side of the marble railing from Colin.
"Mother Confessor, we'd like to... Well, if it's no trouble, we..."
His voice trailed off as he gulped air. Colin smiled encouragement.
"Don't be afraid. What's your name?"
"Yannick, Mother Confessor."
"I'm sorry, Yannick, but Richard can't come watch another game just now. We're busy at the moment. Perhaps tomorrow. I know we both enjoyed it, and we would very much like to come watch again, but on another day."
He shook his head.
"It's not about that. It's my brother. Kip?"
He twisted his hat.
"He's sick. I was wondering if... Well, if Lord Rawl could come do some magic and make it better?"
Colin gave the boy's shoulder a comforting squeeze.
"Well, Richard's not really that kind of wizard. Why don't you go see one of the healers on Stenthurst Street? Tell them what he's sick with, and they'll give him some herbs to make him feel better."
Yannick hung his head.
"We don't have no money for herbs. That's why I was hoping... Kip is real sick."
Colin straightened and peered at the captain. His gaze went from Colin to the boy and back again. He cleared his throat.
"Well, Yannick, I saw you play yesterday," the captain stammered. "Quite good. The team was quite good."
Checking Colin's eyes again, he stabbed a hand into a pocket and came out with a coin. He bent over the rail and pushed the coin into Yannick's fist.
"I know which one's your brother. That was a great play, that goal he made. Take this and get him some herbs like the Mother Confessor said he needs."
Yannick stared in astonishment at the silver coin in his hand.
"Herbs don't cost this much, as I hear told."
The captain waved away the notion.
"Well, I don't have anything smaller. Buy your team a treat for their win with the extra. Now take it and be off. We have palace business we must attend to."
Yannick straightened and clapped a fist to his heart in salute.
Yes, sir.
And practice that kick of yours, the captain called after the boy as he ran across the hall to his fellows. It's a little sloppy.
I will,
Yannick shouted over his shoulder.
Thanks.
Colin watched as he collected his friends and they rushed to the door. Very kind of you, Captain.
Harris, he winced. Thank you, Mother Confessor.
Kara, let's go see this Lady Nadine. Colin hoped the captain, who came to attention at the end of the hall, had had an uneventful watch. Has Nadine tried to leave, Captain Nance?
No, Mother Confessor, he said, when he straightened from his bow. She seemed grateful that someone was taking an interest in her request. When I explained that there could be trouble about, and we needed her to stay in her room, she promised to abide by my instructions.
He glanced at the door.
She said that she didn't want to get me in hot water, and she would do as I asked.
Thank you, Captain. She paused before she opened the door. If she comes out of this room without us, kill her. Don't stop to ask her any questions, and don't give her any warning. Just have the archers take her down. When his brow twitched, she added, If she leaves first, it will be because she has proven she commands magic and has killed us with it. Captain Nance, his face gone as pale as year-old straw, clapped a fist to his heart in salute. The outer sitting room was decorated in red. The walls were a dark crimson, adorned with white crown molding, pink marble baseboard and door casings, and a hardwood floor almost entirely covered with a huge gold-fringed carpet embellished with an ornate leaf and flower motif. The gilded legs of the marble-topped table and of the red velvet tufted chairs were carved with a matching leaf and flower design. Being an interior room, there were no windows. Cut-glass chimneys on the dozen reflector lamps around the room sent sparkles of light dancing across the walls. To Colin's mind, it was one of the least tasteful color schemes in the palace, but there were diplomats who specified this color room when requesting accommodations at the palace. They felt it put them in the right frame of mind for negotiations. Colin was always wary when hearing the arguments of representatives who had requested one of the red rooms. Nadine wasn't in the extravagant outer room. The door to the bedroom was ajar.
Delicious rooms,
Kara whispered. Can I have them? Colin shushed her. She knew why the moored Sith would want a red room. With Kara peeping over her shoulder, Colin cautiously pushed back the bedroom door. Kara's breath tickled her left ear. If it was possible, the bedroom was more jarring to the senses than the sitting room, with the red theme carried into the carpets, embroidered bed cover, immoderate collection of ornate gold-fringed crimson pillows, and the swirled pink marble fireplace around. Colin thought that if Kara was wearing her red leather and ever wanted to hide, she could simply sit in this room and no one would ever find her. Only half the lamps in the bedroom were lit. Several blown glass bowls set about on tables and the desk were filled with dried rose petals, their fragrance mingling with the lamp oil to permeate the air with a heavy, sickly sweet odor. When the hinges squeaked, the woman resting on the bed opened her eyes, saw Colin, and sprang to her feet. Ready to take Nadine with her confessor's power if she gave the slightest indication of aggression, Colin unconsciously held an arm out to her side to keep Kara out of her way. In preparation, her muscles tight as coiled steel, Colin was holding her breath. If the woman conjured magic, Colin would have to be quick. Nadine hastily knuckled the sleep from her eyes. By her indecision as to which foot to put forward in the awkward curtsy she performed, Colin knew that she was no noble woman, but that didn't mean she couldn't be a sister of the dark. Nadine gawked at Kara for an instant before smoothing down her dress at her shapely hips and addressing Colin.
Forgive me, Queen, but I've been on a long journey and I was taking a bit of a rest. I guess I must have fallen asleep. I didn't hear you knock. I'm Nadine Brighton, Queen.
As Nadine dipped into another inelegant curtsy, Colin quickly surveyed the room. The washbasin and ewer hadn't been used. The towels beside them on the washstand were clean and still folded. A simple, worn, woolen travel bag sat at the foot of the bed. A clothes brush and a tin cup were the only foreign objects on the overwrought, gilded table to the other side of a red velvet chair beside the fringed canopy bed. Despite the early spring chill and cold hearth, she hadn't pulled down the bed covers for her nap. Perhaps, thought Colin, so as not to become entangled in them if she had to move fast. Colin didn't apologize for entering without knocking.
Mother Confessor,
she said in a cautious tone, feeling the need to make clear the tacit threat of the power she wielded.
Queen is one of my less common titles. I am more widely known as the Mother Confessor.
As Nadine blushed, the sprinkling of freckles at the top of her cheekbones and across her delicate nose almost disappeared. Her bright brown eyes turned to the floor with unease. She hastily ran her fingers through her thick brown hair, although it didn't look disheveled. She wasn't as tall as Colin, though she looked to be about the same age, or perhaps a year younger. She was a lovely-looking young woman, and cast off no warning signs of threat or danger, but Colin wasn't put at ease by a fresh face and innocent demeanor. Experience had taught Colin hard lessons. Marlin, the latest lesson, hadn't appeared at first to be anything other than an awkward young man. This young woman's lovely eyes, though, didn't seem to have the same timeless quality to them that had so unnerved Colin. Still, her caution wasn't allayed, either. Nadine turned and hurriedly swept the flats of her hands over the bed cover, pressing out the wrinkles with quick strokes.
"Forgive me, Mother Confessor, I didn't mean to muss your lovely bed. I brushed my dress first so I wouldn't get road dust on it. I intended to lie on the floor, but the bed looked so inviting I couldn't resist giving it a try. I hope I haven't caused offense."
"Of course not," Colin said. "I invited you to use the room as your own."
Before the last word was out of Colin's mouth, Kara had swept around her. Even though there seemed to be no rank among the moored Sith, Berdine and Reyna always deferred to Kara's word. Among the Daharans, the rank of the moored Sith, and Kara in particular, seemed undisputed, though Colin had never heard anyone put definition to it. If Kara said spit, people spat. Nadine let out a wide-eyed squeak when she saw the leather-clad moored Sith coming at her.
"Kara!"
Colin called out. Kara ignored her.
"We have your friend Marlin down in the pit. You'll be joining him shortly."
Kara jabbed a finger in the hollow at the base of Nadine's neck, causing her to drop backward onto the chair beside the bed.
"Ow!"
Nadine shouted as she glared up at Kara.
"It hurt!"
As she bounded up off the chair, Kara seized the young woman's throat in an armored fist. She swept her aegil up and pointed it between the wide brown eyes.
"I have not yet begun to hurt you."
Colin snatched Kara's braid and gave it a mighty yank.
"One way or the other, you're going to learn to follow orders."
Kara, still gripping the young woman's throat, turned in surprise.
"Let her go. I told you to let me handle this. Until she makes a threatening move, you will do as you are told, or you can wait outside."
Kara released Nadine with a shove that plopped her down in the chair again.
"This one's trouble. I can feel it. You should let me kill her."
Colin pressed her lips together until Kara rolled her eyes and grudgingly stepped aside. Nadine came off the chair, slower this time. Her eyes teared as she rubbed her throat and coughed.
"Why'd you do that? I've done nothing to you. I didn't disturb any of your fine things. You people have the worst manners of anyone I've ever seen."
She shook a finger at Colin.
"There's no call to treat a person that way."
"On the contrary," Colin said. "An innocent enough-looking young man showed up at the palace today, also asking to see Lord Rawl. He turned out to be an assassin. Thanks to Kara here, we were able to stop him."
Nadine's indignation faltered.
"Oh, that's not the worst of it," Colin added. "He confessed to having an accomplice, an attractive young woman with long brown hair."
Nadine's throat rubbing paused as she looked at Kara, then back to Colin.
"Oh. Well, I guess I can understand the mistake. You asked to see Lord Rawl, too. That's made everyone just a little jumpy. All of us are quite protective of Lord Rawl. I guess I can see the reason for the confusion. No offense taken."
"Kara here is one of Lord Rawl's personal guards," Colin said. "I'm sure you can understand the reason for her belligerent attitude." Nadine took her hand away from her throat and rested it on one hip.
"Of course. I guess I landed in the middle of a hornet's nest." "The problem is," Colin went on, "you haven't yet convinced us you are not the second assassin. For your sake, it would be best if you did so at once."
Nadine's eyes darted between the two women watching her, her relief reversed to alarm.
"Me? A killer? But I'm a woman.
So am I, Kara said. One who is going to have your blood all over this room until you tell us the truth. Nadine spun around and snatched up the chair, brandishing its legs toward Kara and Callan.
Stay away! I'm warning you, Tommy Lancaster and his friend Lester once thought to have their way with me, and they now have to eat all their meals without the benefit of their front teeth.
Put down the chair, Kara warned in a deadly hiss, or you will be eating your next meal in the spirit world. Nadine dropped the chair as if it had caught fire. She retreated until she was up against the wall.
Leave me be. I didn't do anything.
Callan gently hooked Kara's arm and urged her back.
Let a sister of the Aegil handle this, she said in a whisper as she lifted an eyebrow. I know, I said, until she makes a threatening move, but a chair is hardly the kind of threat I had in mind.
Kara's mouth twisted in annoyance.
All right.
For the moment. Callan turned to Nadine.
I need some answers. Tell the truth, and if you really have nothing to do with this assassin, you will have my sincere apology, and I'll do what I can to make up for our inhospitality. But if you lie to me, and you intend doing harm to Lord Rawl, the guards outside have orders not to allow you to leave this room alive. Do you understand?
Nadine, her back pressed against the wall, nodded.
You asked to see Lord Rawl.
Nadine nodded again.
Why? I'm on my way to my love. He's been gone since last autumn. We're to be wed, and I'm on my way to him.
She brushed a strand of hair back from her eyes.
But I don't know where he is, exactly. I was told to go see Lord Rawl, and I would find my betrothed.
Nadine's lower lids brimmed with tears.
That's why I wanted to speak with this Lord Rawl, to ask if he could help.
I see, Callan said. I can understand your distress over your love being missing. What is your young man's name? Nadine pulled her kerchief from her sleeve and dabbed it at her eyes.
Richard?
Richard. Is there more to his name? Nadine nodded.
Richard Cipher.
Callan had to remind herself to draw a breath through her open mouth, but her mind couldn't seem to make her tongue work.
Who?
Kara asked.
Richard Cipher. He's a woods guide where I live, in Heartland. That's in Westland, where we live.
What do you mean, you're to wed him?
Callan finally managed in a whisper. She felt her world threatening to crush in around her as a thousand things all at once whirled chaotically in her mind.
Did he tell you that?
Nadine twisted her damp kerchief.
Well, he was courting me. It was understood. But then he disappeared. A woman came and told me that we're to be married. She said that the sky had spoken to her. She was a mystic of some sort. She knew all about my Richard, how kind and strong and handsome he is and all. She knew all manner of things about me, too. She said that it's my destiny to marry Richard, and Richard's destiny to be my husband.
Woman.
Cullen could get out no more than that one word. Nadine nodded.
Shota, she said her name was.
Cullen's hands balled into fists. Her voice returned with venom.
Shota.
Did this woman, Shota, have anyone with her?
Yes, a strange little fellow, with yellow eyes. He kind of scared me, but she said he was harmless. Shota is the one who told me to come see Lord Rawl. She said Lord Rawl could help me find my Richard.
Callan recognized the description of Shota's companion, Samuel. This woman's voice, calling Richard, my Richard, kept thundering around in the storm in Callan's head. She worked at making her voice sound calm.
Nadine, please wait here.
I will,
Nadine said, gathering her composure.
Is everything all right? You believe me, don't you? Every word is true.
Callan didn't answer, but instead pulled her stunned stare from Nadine and marched from the room. Kara closed the door as she followed on Callan's heels. Callan staggered to a halt in the outer room, everything swimming in a watery red blur.
Mother Confessor. Kara whispered. What's wrong? Your face is as red as my leather. Who is this, Shota?
Shota is a witch woman.
Kara stiffened at that news.
And do you know this Richard Cipher?
Callan twice swallowed past the painful lump in the back of her throat.
Richard was raised by his stepfather. Until Richard found out that Darkin Rawl was his real father, his name was Richard Cipher.
Chapter 5
I'll kill her,
Cullen rasped in a hoarse voice as she stared off at nothing.
With my bare hands, I'll strangle the life out of her.
Kara turned toward the bedroom.
I will take care of it. Better if you let me take care of her.
Cullen hooked Kara's arm.
Not her. I'm talking about Shota.
She gestured toward the bedroom door.
She doesn't understand any of this. She doesn't know about Shota.
You know this witch woman, then?
Cullen bitterly huffed out a breath.
Oh, yes, I know her. She's been trying to prevent Richard and me from being together since the first.
Why would she do that? Cullen turned away from the bedroom door.
I don't know. She gives a different reason every time, but I sometimes fear that it's because she wants Richard for herself.
Kara frowned.
How would getting Lord Rawl to marry this little strumpet gain Shota, Lord Rawl?
Cullen flicked a hand.
I don't know. Shota is always up to something. She's caused us trouble at every turn.
Her fists tightened with resolve.
But it won't work this time. If it's the last thing I do, I'm going to end her meddling. And then Richard and I are going to be married.
Her voice dropped to a whispered oath.
If I have to touch Shota with my power and send her to the underworld, I will end her meddling.
Kara folded her arms as she considered the problem.
What do you wish done with Nadine?
Her blue eyes turned toward the bedroom.
It still might be best to get rid of her.
Cullen squeezed the bridge of her nose between a finger and thumb.
This isn't Nadine's doing. She's simply a pawn in Shota's plotting.
One foot soldier can sometimes cause you more trouble than a general's battle plan if he...
Kara's words trailed off as her arms came unfolded. She cocked her head as if listening to a wind in the halls.
Lord Rawl is coming.
The ability of the moored Sith to sense Richard through their bond to him was uncanny, if not unnerving. The door opened. Verdine and Reyna, wearing leather of the same cut and skin-tight style as Kara's, but brown rather than red, strutted into the room. Both were a bit shorter than Kara, but no less attractive. Where Kara was leggy, muscular, and without a spare ounce of fat, blue-eyed Verdine had a more curvaceous shape. Verdine's wavy brown hair was plaited in the characteristic long braid of a moored Sith, as was graceful Reyna's fine dark hair. All three shared the same ruthless confidence. Reyna's incisive dark-eyed gaze took in Kara's red leather, but she made no comment. Both she and Verdine wore grim, forbidding expressions. The two moored Sith turned to face one another from either side of the door.
"We present Lord Rawl,"
Verdine said in an officious tone,
"the seeker of truth and wielder of the sword of truth, the bringer of death, the master of Dahara, the ruler of the Midlands, the commander of the Gar Nation, the champion of free people and bane of the wicked."
Her penetrating blue eyes turned to Cullen.
"And the betrothed of the Mother Confessor."
She lifted an introductory arm toward the door.
Cullen couldn't imagine what was going on.
She had seen the moored Sith display a variety of temperaments, from imperious to mischievous, but she had never seen them acting ceremonial. Richard strode into the room, his raptor gaze locked on Cullen. For an instant, the world stopped. There was nothing else but the two of them, joined in a silent link. A smile widened on his lips and gleamed in his eyes, a smile of unbounded love. There was only her and Richard, only his eyes. But the rest of him... She felt her mouth drop open. In astonishment, Cullen put a hand over her heart. As long as she had known him, he had worn only his simple woods clothes. But now, his black boots were all she recognized. The tops of the boots were wrapped with leather thongs, pinned with silver emblems embossed with geometric designs, and covered new black wool trousers. Over a black shirt was a black, open-sided tunic, decorated with symbols snaking along a wide gold band running all the way around its squared edges. A wide, multi-layered leather belt bearing several more of the silver emblems and a gold-worked pouch to each side cinched the magnificent tunic at his waist. Hooked on the belt was a small leather purse. The ancient tooled leather baldric holding the gold and silver-wrought scabbard for the Sword of Truth crossed over his right shoulder. At each wrist was a wide, leather-padded silver band bearing linked rings encompassing more of the strange symbols. His broad shoulders bore a cape that appeared to be made of spun gold. He looked at once noble and sinister, regal and deadly. He looked like a commander of kings, and like a vision of what the prophecies had named him, the bringer of death. Cullen would never have thought he could look more handsome than he always did, more commanding, more imposing. She was wrong. As her jaw worked, trying to bring forth words that weren't there, he crossed the room. He bent and kissed her temple. "Good," Kara announced. She needed that. She had a headache. She lifted an eyebrow to Cullen. "All better now?" Cullen, hardly able to get her breath, hardly hearing Kara, touched her fingers to him, as if to test if this was a vision or real. "Like it?" he asked.
"Like it? Dear spirits," she breathed.
He chuckled.
"I'll take that for a yes."
Cullen wished everyone was gone.
"But Richard, what is this? Where did you get all this?"
She couldn't take her hand from his chest. She liked the feel of his breathing. She could feel his heart beating, too. And she could feel her own heart pounding.
"Well," he said, "I knew you wanted me to get some new clothes."
She pulled her gaze from his body and looked up into his gray eyes.
"What? I never said that."
He laughed.
"Your beautiful green eyes said it for you. When you looked at my old Woods outfit, your eyes spoke quite clearly."
She took a step back and gestured to the new clothes.
"Where did you get all this?"
He clasped one of her hands, and with the fingers of his other lifted her chin to gaze into her eyes.
"You're so beautiful. You're going to look magnificent in your blue wedding dress. I wanted to look worthy of the Mother Confessor herself when we're married. I had it made in a hurry so as not to delay our wedding."
"He had the seamstresses make it for him. It was a surprise," Kara said. "I never told her your secret, Lord Rull. She tried her best to get it out of me, but I didn't tell her."
"Thank you, Kara," Richard laughed. "I bet it wasn't easy."
Cullen laughed with him.
"But this is wonderful. Mistress Wellington made all this for you?"
"Well, not all of it. I told her what I wanted, and she and the other seamstresses went to work. I think she did a fine job."
"I will give her my compliments, if not a hug."
Cullen tested the cape between a finger and thumb.
"She made this? I've never seen anything like it. I can't believe she made this."
"Well, no," Richard admitted. "That and some of the other things came from the wizard's keep."
"The keep? What were you doing up there?"
"When I was there before, I came across these rooms where the wizards used to stay. I went back and had a better look at some of the things that belonged to them."
"When did you do this?"
"A few days ago, when you were busy meeting with some of the officials from our new allies."
Cullen's brow tightened as she appraised the outfit.
"The wizards of that time wore this? I thought wizards always wore simple robes."
"Most of them did. One wore some of this."
"What kind of wizard wore an outfit like this?"
"A war wizard."
"A war wizard?"
she whispered in astonishment. Though he largely didn't know how to use his gift, Richard was the first war wizard to have been born in nearly 3,000 years. Cullen was about to launch into a raft of questions, but remembered that there were more consequential matters at the moment. Her mood sank.
"Richard,"
she looked away from his eyes.
"There is someone here to see you."
She heard the bedroom door squeak.
"Richard?"
Nadine, standing in the doorway, expectantly twisted her kerchief in her fingers.
"I heard Richard's voice."
"Nadine?" Nadine's eyes went as big as Sandarian gold crowns.
"Richard!"
Richard smiled politely.
"Nadine?"
His mouth smiled, anyway. His eyes, though, held no hint of a smile. It was as discordant a look as Cullen had ever seen on his face. Cullen had seen Richard angry. She had seen him in the lethal rage from Magic of the Sword of Truth, when the magic danced dangerously in his eyes. And she had seen him with the deadly, calm countenance invoked when he turned the blade white. In the fury of commitment and determination, Richard was capable of looking frightening. But no look she had ever seen on his face was as terrifying to Cullen as the one she saw now. This wasn't a deadly rage that gripped his eyes, or a lethal commitment. This was somehow worse. The depth of disinterest in that empty smile, in his eyes, was frightening. The only way Colin could imagine it being worse would be if such a gaze were directed her way. That look, so devoid of fervor, if directed at her, would have broken her heart. Nadine apparently didn't know him as well as did Colin. She didn't see anything but the smile on his lips.
Richard!
Nadine dashed across the room and threw her arms around his neck. She seemed ready to throw her legs around Richard, too. Colin shot an arm out to stop Kara before the moored Sith could take more than a step. Colin had to force herself to stand her ground and hold her tongue. Despite everything she and Richard meant to each other, she knew that this was something beyond her say. This was Richard's past, and as well as she knew him, some of that past, his romantic past anyway, was largely unknown territory. Up until that moment, it had seemed unimportant.
This is the end of Side 1, Part B. There is no need to change the balance control. Simply turn this cassette to Side 2 and continue.